There's a make-believe story that I want to tell you children this morning. It's a story about an angel whose job it was every day to leave heaven, come down to earth, and collect all the prayers that people had said for that day. Each evening, he would head back to heaven, and he'd have a great big sack full of all these prayers. One day, God said to the angel, he said, "Today I want you to do something different. I want you to sort out the prayers into two different kinds and put them into two sacks instead of one." And the angel said, "Well, how shall I sort the prayers?" And God said, "I want you to put all the prayers where people are asking me for something in one sack. And in the other sack, put all the prayers where people are thanking me for something." And the angel said, "Well, I can certainly do that." And he headed back down to earth to collect prayers. Now, the angels that were stationed around God's throne in heaven, they began to talk among themselves. And one of the angels said, I wonder which sack will be bigger and filled with more prayers. The sack holding the prayers of people asking God for things, or the sack holding the prayers where people are thanking God for things that he did. As the angels around the throne, they talked. One of them said, "Well, I'm absolutely certain that the bag filled with prayers of thanks will be the biggest bag." And the other angel said, "Well, how can you figure that?" And he said, "Because most people eat three times a day. And before they eat their food, what do? They take a minute and thank God for the food. So I'm sure that the bag filled with prayers of thanks will be much bigger than the bag of prayers that people are asking God for things." Well, at the end of the day, the angel that collected the prayers and sorted them into two bags, he came back to heaven. And he had one bag that was just stuffed full. And the other bag was kind of slack because it didn't have much in it at all. Well, which of the two bags do you think was the fullest? The bag with the prayers of people asking God to do things for them, or the bag with the prayers where people were thanking God for doing things for them? You know which one it was? The bag of the prayers where people were asking God to do things was stuffed full, and the other bag was pretty much empty. Now, is there a lesson for us to learn in this make-believe story? Do you think it really is pretty accurate in what it tells us about what people say to God when they pray? And how about you? And how about me? Are most of my prayers asking God for things, or am I thanking God for the good things that he's given me? One of the primary indicators that as an individual I'm drifting away from God is a failure to thank God. One of the primary indicators that a society is drifting away from God is that the people of that society are forgetting to thank God. And for nations as well, a primary indicator that a nation is drifting away from God is that its citizens are failing to thank God. So it's very important as a parent, that we build mechanisms into our lives to help our children come to realize that it is of paramount importance that we give thanks to God regularly. Some time ago, I was reading the local section of our newspaper, the Bradenton Herald, and it was a short time before Thanksgiving, and I was interested in what the author of the article had to say about Thanksgiving. And before I'd gotten halfway through the article, I suddenly realized that it reminded me of the story of Queen Esther. You guys know the story of Queen Esther found in the Bible? You remember she was part of the nation of the Jews that were taken into captivity. Their city of Jerusalem was just destroyed. And thousands and thousands and thousands of the people in a couple different waves were transported off to the great city of Babylon. Daniel was among those. Anyway, this article reminded me of the story of Esther. I'm going to read the article to you and you see if you can figure out why it reminded me of the story of Esther. The article's titled, What's the Meaning of Thanksgiving? It seems like but yesterday that we asked our Bradenton Herald readers to share with us their thoughts on what the Thanksgiving holiday means to them and their families. Now, another year has passed, and soon the day of family gatherings and grand feasts will be here again. And I would say, I think the author has just tipped his hand as to what he thinks Thanksgiving is all about. It's about grand feasts and family gatherings. Anyway, the author goes on, and so here we are again, asking readers to share with us their thoughts on the meaning of Thanksgiving. As in years past, the writer of the winning essay will receive a gift certificate for a free turkey. I don't know if this water's been here since the last time I got here, but I need some water. The author continues, of all the holidays we celebrate, Thanksgiving has remained the most pure in its tradition. Unlike noisy 4th of July parties that have little to do with the founding of the United States, or the mad commercialism that has so tarnished the Christmas holidays, Thanksgiving celebrations still center around the important act of counting our blessings, both in a personal sense and an historic sense, for the peace and prosperity we enjoy. It is the one time families hold sacred for sitting down together to share a meal prepared in grand style. It is in that sharing one finds the real meaning of Thanksgiving, coming together, reviewing connections, sharing food, laughter, reminiscing, and most important, thankful prayers for the good people and blessings in our lives. Of course, there is the story of the pilgrims and the first Thanksgiving Day feast with the Indians, who helped the colonialists survive in the New World. Each Thanksgiving holiday, millions of families across this nation repeat the sacred tradition of recognizing the source of all blessings in prayers of gratitude. Perhaps that is why so many people find such great joy in this quiet, peaceful holiday that puts emphasis on communion. Giving thanks gives to us something back in return. As the 18th century dramatist George Lillo said, when thankfulness overflows the swelling heart and breathes in free and uncorrupted praise for benefits received, propitious heaven takes such acknowledgement as fragrant incense and doubles all its blessings. We would like to know what thanksgiving means to our readers. How do you measure and count your blessings? Use the accompanying coupon or send a separate letter up to a maximum of 200 words to the address in the coupon box. A group of judges selected from the newsroom staff will pick the best written entry, whose author will receive a gift certificate for a turkey. The deadline is Wednesday, November 20. Responses will be published the week of Thanksgiving, beginning Monday, November 25, with the winning letter published on Thanksgiving Day. That's the article. Hope it didn't put you to sleep. Have you figured out why this article reminded me of the story of Esther? Anybody? Why does this article remind me of the story of Queen Esther? Well, just as in the book of Esther, there's no explicit reference to God. There's no explicit reference to God in this whole article. The person who wrote it has studiously dodged and played fast with language in order to avoid mentioning God. The closest the author gets to mentioning God is when he quotes a poet who in an oblique way refers to God as propitious heaven. The story of Esther, you all know, it's the story of a people who had failed to obey the covenant their ancestors had made with God for generation after generation. And finally, just as God predicted would happen, he punished them by removing them from the land he'd given them and seeing that they were deported and taken to the land of Babylon. After 70 years, the people were to return, for the prophets had written that they were to be in captivity for 70 years and then return to the land. And after 70 years went by, it was time for them to return. In fact, the king at that time, Cyrus, he made it attractive for the Jews to be able to go back to their homeland and there reestablish the worship of their God once again. The problem was that many of the Jews over the 70 years of captivity had become very affluent and well-to-do in Babylon. And so when it came time to return, most of the Jews did not return to the land of Israel. The people of God were identified more by their adherence to their traditions and the customs of their ancestors than they were in walking daily in obedience with God. That sounds a lot to me like my own nation. We have a Christian heritage, and we still have many of the trappings of Christianity. But as a nation, we're a people who are tiptoeing around lest we offend some sensitive soul by making an explicit reference to the God of heaven, the maker of heaven and earth. Nevertheless, if you think through this article, you have to concede that the vocabulary used by the author demands certain things. When you say thank, how many arguments, talking linguistically now, how many arguments go along with that verb? Thank is a verb. You got to have somebody that does the thanking, right? You need an agent. So someone thanks. Don't you need an object as well? Someone that gets thanks, gets thanked? Yes, so you have to have an agent. You have to have the activity of thanking, and then the object, the person who receives the commendation. That's part of language. And yet in the article, even though you have to have a minimum of two parties involved in giving thanks, does the author make it ever clear who is to be thanked? No, he doesn't. He makes it clear that we people are the ones who are to give thanks, but he never clarifies who it is that is to be thanked. He also mentions blessings. To bless is an activity. It's to benefit, to do good to something, isn't it? Benefits come from someone who does good, who does benefits others. So once again, you got to have two arguments. You got to have an agent and you've got to have an object. And yet, even though the author mentions the fact that we are the ones who experience blessings, does he ever say who is the blesser, the one that benefits us? No. He tiptoes completely around that and never mentions the fact that God is the one that provides the blessings. If we are the ones who are benefited, and I agree we certainly are, then who provided the benefits? No one? Well, if no one provided the benefits, then we're really not benefited. All we are is really lucky. And maybe Thanksgiving should be renamed Lucky Day rather than Thanksgiving Day. If we're not going to acknowledge that there is one who blesses us, who deserves to be acknowledged and thanks. Any of you kids like to have birthdays? Man, my grandkids are really into birthdays. They love having birthdays. You know, when you get old like me, not so much. I'm not much into birthdays anymore. Well, why do you suppose my little grandkids like birthdays so much? Because they get presents. If my grandkids get presents, doesn't that mean there's someone that presents them or gives them the presents? Yes. If there was no one giving presents, then there wouldn't be any presents. If there was no one who blesses us, then there would be no blessings. If no one benefited us, then there would be no benefits to celebrate. This article reminded me of the Jews in another way. As this author did, the Jews scrupulously avoided saying the name of God. In fact, if you go back in the oldest manuscripts in Hebrew, you'll see that the name, personal name for God, we call it the Tetragrammaton. It is four letters, a YHWH in Hebrew. And it is written in the old Hebrew script, and it's very distinct. And they wrote it that way so everybody would know when you get to that name of God, you don't say it. Well, why didn't they want to say the name of God? The rabbis reasoned like this. God says that we're not to take his name in vain. Well, if we never say the name of God, then we could never take it in vain, right? And so they prohibited everyone from saying the name of God. Now, do you think that's why the author of this article avoided saying the name of God, that he considered it too sacred to be mentioned? No, absolutely not. I think it's another reason. I was reading an article in the Palm Beach Post-Times, and there was a person who had written a letter to the editor complaining about a certain conservative syndicated columnist who had written an article in which he mentioned God, and he spelled the word God with a capital G. And this reader was incensed. He said, "You're allowing him to foist his values on all the rest of us." He was greatly offended by this reference this columnist had made to God. And so, you know, you read this article about Thanksgiving, and the author studiously avoids mentioning God, and I think that's the reason. He does not want to antagonize anyone who would not accept that people can believe in the great Creator God in heaven. Well, today, where are we? We're in a sanctuary, and it is dedicated to the worship of the God of heaven. And so you and I should be very clear as to who it is that we thank. We should be very clear as to who it is that provides us with the benefits so that we ought to thank God. The author of Psalm 136 wrote very unambiguously, "Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his loving kindness is everlasting. Give thanks to the God of gods, for his loving kindness is everlasting. Give thanks to the Lord of lords, for his loving kindness is everlasting." Now, it would seem logical that the more a child is given, the more grateful he will be towards those who give him things. Any moms and dads out there that have had experience in this arena? It would seem logical that the more prosperous any adult becomes, the more grateful that adult would become. And it would seem logical that the more affluent and prosperous any society becomes, the more thankful that society would become. And it would seem that the more progress the human race makes, the more it would be marked by gratefulness. But you know what? Such is not the case at all. Whether with children, or adults, or a society, or a nation. Now, we could expand our investigation into this realm of gratefulness. Would you believe that if I told you that the healthier people are, the less likely they are to be grateful? The healthier people are, the less likely they are to be grateful. The more freedoms people have, the less likely they are to really appreciate their freedoms. The better health care people have, the less likely they are to appreciate it, to be thankful for it. As a pastor, I can't tell you how many times I have visited sick parishioners in the hospital recuperating from this and that, and how many times I heard people complain about the nursing staff, about the doctors, about the food, about noise, everything else. And I had thought so many times, I wish I could package you up and take you to a third world nation where the hospital consists of an aisle running down the middle of a large room, and on either side you have people lying on whatever it is that they brought to use as a bed, where they're not provided any food. If you're going to be fed, your relatives better come outside the hospital and cook and bring it into you. And yet, with all that we receive, what do? We complain. The more we get, typically, the less appreciative, the less grateful we are. We could set up two continuums here today, and on one continuum, we could have humility on this side and pride on that side. And then we could set up another one in which gratefulness is at one end and the lack of gratefulness at the other. And guess where those two, what those two would have in common? The more humble people are, the more likely it is that they are grateful. The less humble, the more proud people are, the more likely it is that they are ungrateful. In Romans chapter 1, a portion of which Daryl read earlier, we find Paul, as he is opening this treatise that he writes to the church in Rome. And he makes a bold statement, which may seem out of place initially. He's talking about God's judgment being revealed. Verse 18, Romans chapter 1, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness." The wrath of God, what is that? Wrath is heightened anger. And it's actually a metonymy here for the punishment. It's not really talking directly about anger. For example, when I was a kid, my younger brother and I were talking about mom and dad and the difference in the punishment they meted out. And my younger brother said something like, if you get mom angry, you'll have to sit for 20 minutes. But if you get dad angry, you won't be able to sit down for 20 minutes. So we weren't talking about anger, were we? We were talking about the punishment that mom or dad would give. And when Paul says here, the wrath of God is revealed, he's saying the punishment of God is revealed from heaven. Well, why? He says in verse 19, because that which is known about God is evident within them. For God made it evident to them. Well, how did he make it evident what we could know about God? He says in verse 20, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power," that's his infinite, innate power, "and his divine nature, his supremely brilliant brilliance and genius," it's been clearly seen. Through what? Through nature which he made. And then comes the startling statement in verse 21, "For even though they knew God," see, they knew God, "but they did not," what? "Honor him as God." And then he adds, "or give thanks." That's what he means by honoring God. It means acknowledging God for what he's done and what he's given us. That's where they went wrong. They did not give God thanks. And if you wonder, you know, our nation, where is our nation going wrong anywhere? Let me tell you, our nation is going wrong because we're not giving thanks to the God who's given us all we have. Verse 22, he says, "Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures." One of my sons got me watching this program called Alone, and people get taken off to remote parts of the world, and they're left all alone, and they have to survive. And I've been amazed at the way a guy will with his bow and arrows, he'll shoot a grouse. And then he'll talk to the grouse afterwards and say, thank you for giving your life to keep me alive. He's talking to the bird. Or a lady that was snaring rabbits, and she caught a rabbit, and she says, oh, I'm so sorry, buddy, but thank you for providing me another meal. See, they're talking to these four-footed creatures. They don't realize there's a God in heaven that made these things for us. The verse 24, here's the punishment. It says, therefore, God gave them over. That's the punishment that God has revealed. He lets us go. When you're raising teenagers and eventually they get to the point where they have made up their own mind, they're going to go the way they want to go, regardless of all your efforts to persuade them otherwise. And what do? You let them go. And that's what God has done with us as a nation. He's let us go. As we are celebrating the Lord's table this morning, I was reminded about how very good God is to us, that he would provide his son to cover our sin debt, that we might be set right with him. And I recalled a weightlifting tournament that I attended back when our son Brad was a senior in high school. He was a very disciplined and good weightlifter. And through his senior year, he won every weightlifting tournament. And we'd come to the final tournament, the county meet. And Brad went on to eventually win the state title in his weight class in 2001. He competed in Tacoma, Washington in the AAU championships, and he took the silver medal for the clean and jerk. Extremely gifted and strong weightlifter. At that county meet, Brad did the bench press. They did two lifts, the bench press and then the clean and jerk. And after the bench press, he was 30 pounds ahead of the nearest competitor. But a week before, he'd pulled a little muscle in his shoulder, and so he was having trouble. And he said, I'm just going to do enough weight to win my weight class. And I said, that's fine. So he went down, and you know how it works. They get three chances to make their lift. And he tried to do the first lift, but his shoulder hurt too bad, and he dropped the weight. And he came over to me, and there's Dad and his son who's got tears in his eyes, and pretty soon I've got tears in my eyes too, and I'm rubbing his shoulder. He's got about 3 or 4 minutes, and then he's got to go and do the second lift. He went down, and he tried to lift the weight again, and he dropped it. He couldn't. It hurt too bad. So by now, I've got tears running down my cheeks. So does he, and we realize he's probably not going to win this weightlifting tournament, and sure enough, he failed to make that third lift, and so he was disqualified. But you know, I walked out of that gymnasium that afternoon after the weightlifting tournament as happy as I'd ever been. You're probably thinking, well, how could that be? There was a boy named Jason that lifted alongside my son Brad for 4 years. They were seniors graduating together. You know how many weightlifting tournaments Jason had won in those 4 years? Zero. Not a single one. You know what happened that day? Jason won. At what cost? It was at the cost of my son losing. God sent his son into this world to lose so that you and I might win forever. That's what God did when he sent his son into this world. Do you know him? Have you trusted him? Have you thanked God for him? Let's close in prayer. Our Father, you are so very, very good. And we confess, Lord, that we often gloss over your goodness. But you, who provided a way for us to be set right with you, how can we do anything but thank you today and extol you and publish abroad what you've done for us personally and what you've done for all, for anyone who will come and trust in your Son Jesus can be set right with you, not just for today, not just for this life, but forever. So we bless you today, and we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.